Scott,
Yes?
I got a question for you. Because I'm assuming you know about mead and shit.
I guess.
The
Only those two
beverage.
things. Two things in life
Well,
that you know about, mead and shit.
presumably.
And shit.
Is mead supposed to have a bunch of debris floating in it?
Welcome to I Thought They Smelled Bad on the Outside, a show that was once at the funeral for old Cuttlefish Jackson, and we were playing him out, you know, as we do, and we got to his Cuttlefish's favorite song, I Ain't Got No Shoes, and it was at that point that in a flash of light appeared Jesus, the Devil, Buddha, and Soren Kierkegaard.
And we asked them why they were here, because this was a closed funeral. By invite only. And none of them were wearing shoes anyway, so why the fuck were they here?
That is true. And it was at this point that Kierkegaard spoke up, but he only speaks Dutch. And we have established before that
we
are not
Dutch.
Good linguists. We are bad at languages.
And we hate the Dutch.
We do hate the Dutch.
But only on Tuesdays. Only on Tuesdays.
In commemoration of that incident with that Dutch guy.
It's true.
And it was at this point that old One-Eyed Zeke, having met the Buddha, decided to kill the Buddha. And you can elaborate more from there.
Well, it's what you do. I mean, we were out for a walk one day. And I'm walking along. And I turn to myself and I go, "Self, where the hell did you come from? How are you beside me?" And Buddha said, "Sir, I don't know who you are or why you're talking to me, but..." And then I stabbed him, because since it's Buddha, that's what you do, right? I mean,
exactly.
I don't know a lot about Buddha, but I know you're supposed to kill him, because he's some sort of resurrecting zombie like Jesus or Dracula, right?
That was the case. And then, as we were murdering Buddha, as we thought was appropriate, old Cuttlefish hopped out of his grave. And he ran off with the devil, apparently that being the arrangement they had, thus leaving us in an awkward situation with a pan of funeral fudge and a bunch of blues musicians wearing no shoes and a dead Buddha.
And that's how the Rolling Stones came to be.
That it was. Hey, my name is Scott.
I'm Jim.
I'm Paul.
I'm Jonathan.
Yeah. We're doing the deep voice episode again. This is great.
Deep voice.
Deep voice.
Ladies. Hello.
The first time you said cuttlefish, you like stuttered, and I thought you said cuttlefish dick. And I was trying to figure out, is he called that because he has the dick of a cuttlefish, or
yes,
his dick is a cuttlefish?
His penis is a cuttlefish.
Is it possible?
How do you
he
think he got the name?
Yeah. You think we just make this shit up as we go along? Is that what you're saying? Are you saying everything we say is a lie?
Is this some sort of elaborate, irrational storytelling game?
I need
some
citations.
Rules are only known to us.
Yeah, some horrible gimmick that we came up with while drinking heavily one night in a hotel room? How dare you make these accusations?
Terrible.
Scandal. Shenanigans.
I think it's improved from the Cosby Leprechaun business.
Okay, that is very likely true.
Yeah.
So
how can you possibly improve upon a Cosby Leprechaun? I mean,
Leonard Part Six.
That is the ultimate in everything.
In things that are Cosby Leprechauns.
if I had any sort of Irish accent, I'd say something about Jell-O right now.
Probably. Yeah, but the thing is in the UK, they call all dessert pudding, so Jell-O pudding doesn't make sense to them. They don't even have it.
Yeah, but don't they also call certain, like, meals pudding, too?
Or no, that is
pie.
Dessert.
That's
like
pie.
The dessert course is called a pudding. Even if you just have like pie and ice cream, it's still the pudding course.
I was thinking of the various meat pies that are also like you don't get
like blood pudding, tasty, tasty.
Oh, blood pudding.
It's a main course and a dessert, and full of hardened chunks of fat.
Black pudding.
Also a meat course and a dessert and full of hardened chunks and fat.
We could do this like all night, seriously, just listing British food.
How is it the UK doesn't have an obesity problem to rival the States?
They do.
There's just not that many of them.
But that's...
They do. They do.
They have the exact same obesity problem.
They should have gotten there a lot first. Like, much more first.
Yes. I don't know, because...
You should have gotten there way best.
Well, you have to remember, they don't put high fructose corn syrup in everything. Just fat.
Yeah, just America raw, everyday animal fat.
Yeah. America has a weird obsession with corn.
I've lived in the South, and it's not just the fat that you're eating down there. Like, it's
the fact
it's
that you're deep frying peanut butter.
Yeah, you're deep frying everything. You're putting sugar in everything. You know, like a simple glass of sweet tea will rot your teeth from the inside out. You know,
yeah, you can stand up a spoon in that shit.
That was the mucus mixture I once made.
So yeah, there are other factors at play here. I did read. I don't know. This might not actually be interesting at all, but I did read that some people are blaming air conditioning. Like, because they're finding that not only are people getting fat, but it's people all over the world. Like, even in underdeveloped countries and places where normally you'd see the, you know, Save the Children ads, they're having obesity problems. And it also falls to, like, pets, and not just pets, but also lab animals, where the diet is very strictly controlled. They're getting fat. Like, the very things that should not have an obesity problem because everything about them is supposed to be controlled are also getting fat. Like a lab rat today compared to one from 40 years ago is significantly fatter than it used to be. So
air conditioning pumps out some kind of invisible fat matter or something.
No,
like
apparently
that.
The idea is that because our temperature, like the temperatures we live in, are so controlled that mm-hmm. you know, you don't have as large temperature swings between hot and cold, and you know, your body doesn't shiver and sweat the way it does if you don't have air conditioning, then that is I guess contributing to it. I don't know.
That, and there's estrogen in the water, and that just fucks up any plans you have of losing weight.
Yep. There's everything in the water.
Yeah.
But once
okay,
you start
so,
lactating as a man, then you've probably hit a limit.
Yeah. So there's still time to donate to Extra Life for Kids, where Sam and I will be playing video games 25 hours continuously.
For the children.
For the children's hospitals.
Have you decided on a game yet?
I will go through a bunch of things. I've got like two Humble Bundles bought that I have barely touched. So
just
I will
two?
Probably.
Oh.
I am new to the Humble Bundling.
I have like six of those. It's disgusting. Of course, they're so cheap. They're so cheap.
They are very affordable. So I will probably be going through those for a bit. Some GTA 5. I don't know what else.
I can't possibly imagine playing one single video game for 25 hours. That would
I have seriously considered just sitting down and replaying Jade Empire the entire day.
I did it with Metal Gear Solid 3. I got home with it. I sat down. I played it. I didn't realize my roommate went to work. I thought she went to the store, which was 15 minutes away. That was 8 hours. I did not sleep. I did not eat. I think I went to the bathroom once.
Well, that just makes sense because you didn't eat.
I blame the air conditioning.
Air conditioning.
Nope. I can't afford air conditioning. I'm fucking poor, man. Air conditioning for me is a window.
He does live on an island. So
are you thinner for it?
Oh, I'm 147 pounds and I'm 6'2".
He is a twig man.
Yep.
That's what it is. I'm also 6'2", and I have air conditioning. I'm 300 pounds, so that's clearly the only variable between our lives.
Yep.
Yes. Yes.
The only one.
We live underground. We both.
The only significant difference. Yep.
You are completely surrounded by Rockstar cans as well.
right. So it's pick of the week.
Similar our lives are.
That's kind of terrifying.
All right. So pick of the week, where we pick a thing for the week. Jim, you pick.
You're throwing this to me now?
Yes. I made the transition. I get to pick who I go to.
You son of a bitch. Because you know what I'm picking?
What?
Guess. It's not a happy thing. I still got a bone to pick.
Oh, still?
We only unofficially bitched about this last time.
Exactly.
I have to officially complain now.
All right. Yeah. My bone to pick is with certain parents. Not good parents. Not parents that give a shit about their children and look at them and go, you know, I think you're going to grow up to be a responsible member of society.
No diet soda for you.
Yeah, no. Those kind of parents, I'm like, no, you know what? You do your thing, man. You do your thing. My bone to pick is with the parents who are like, you know, parenting is hard. I mean, I understood the initial idea of it. I stick my dick in this chick, and then 9 months later, a tiny larval human pops out. And a decade later, I'm supposed to do something with it that isn't cook it in a frying pan. But instead of actually raising it to be productive, why don't I just sit it in front of video games and TV and let those teach it morality? Because, well, Grand Theft Auto's out. We all know it. Just about everybody's probably played it, because apparently the entire fucking planet picked it up. And
just,
is now
just a billion people so far.
And a billion and a half people are bitching and whining about how GTA Online isn't working. And clearly, since Rockstar knew it was going to sell every video game on planet Earth at once, it should clearly have had every server it could steal to work on this. But while I would love to bitch about the server instabilities, no. Again, my bone to pick is with parents. Again, specifically the ones that completely ignore rating systems or any information about the video game or really anything at all that would get
their way. Or kindly advice from store clerks who might be like, you know, there's gratuitous torture and full frontal nudity in this game.
Yep, really awful pixelated titties.
I think the boobs are deliberately awful.
Oh yeah, they have to be. They have to be. There's no question of that. But it's like, no, here's a torture scene that's reminiscent of Reservoir Dogs at points. I'm still not entirely certain that jerry can was full of water.
Why like would it be full of water?
Well, they say that it's water during the torture scene. And I'm like, that's yellow. And I'm pretty sure if you waterboard a man with gasoline, it just kills him.
Yeah, that's death.
Yeah. But you do it anyway. But no, like, I'm not going to say violent video games make your kids violent. They don't. Violent anything doesn't make someone violent.
In fact, there's a recent study that has shown that the media claiming that video games make people violent is so frustrating that it makes people violent.
Yeah.
More so than video games.
Well, it makes sense. You're being constantly told you're the bad guy. Something beyond your control is making you worse. That's bullshit. Like, if you move somebody's locus of control, they tend to get pissed off. If you tell humans they don't have free will, there's some lovely British studies that indicate they get mad quick. They get mad wicked quick. Humans kind of like having free will. So claiming their locus of control is elsewhere pisses people off. But exposure to violent media still gives you the ideas. And I'm not saying that as, oh, well, you know, kids are going to be magically violent because they play this violent game. No, I just think
but
they're going
to... Trevor is not a role model.
No, not even a little bit. But I think it is going to cost you a little bit of human empathy along the way, especially if you're in a developmental phase where you're trying to learn human empathy. Like, I get parents in. They pick this thing up. They don't bat an eye to buy it for a kid. But if they were walking in and their kid's like, oh, mommy, 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 buy me Friday the 13th. Buy me Halloween. Buy me Suspiria.
Buy me Hostel 2.
Well, if a kid comes in, looks at his mother and says, buy me Suspiria, I'm going to shed a single tear. For two reasons. One, that kid is amazing for actually knowing about Suspiria. And two, I can't sell it to him. And that sucks. But, like, that's it. Let's go the Hostel 2 route. Like, it's rampant fucking gore porn. But a parent would be like, no, I'm not buying that for my kid. You can't expose them to that. But an interactive medium where you can torture people, fuck them up with a claw hammer, run them down with cars, everything like that, that's okay? Really? And, I mean, I finished it earlier in the week. And it's really 80s at the end. Like, really 80s. Like, I expected Simple Minds to start playing during the ending credits. But still, I'm like, it really wouldn't kill the parents to learn a little bit. The ESRB exists for a reason. It's really not a hard thing to understand.
But there's a nice little box on the back that explains why it is not for you know, anyone under 17.
Yeah.
And if you can look, and the ESRB does skew a little higher than the MPAA. So there's a lot of things that have passed at PG that get a teen rating. So you can look at Legend, the black box of Legend of Zelda, and it's like, okay, this is a realistic looking human with a realistic sword hitting people.
Yeah.
But there's no blood. I think my kids can handle that.
Yeah, and I mean, that's fine. I mean, Infamous is moderately realistic in its appearance. Got a teen rating, mostly because you have a guy flying around using electrical powers to, at best, stun people. And, I mean, you can rip the life force out of them with them if you want. But, I mean, like, you compare, say, Dead Space, GTA, and Mass Effect. They're all M-rated games, but the content is all completely different. Like, Dead Space will scare the fuck out of kids. But Mass Effect? Mass Effect gets an M rating by and large due to content more than anything. It's not, you know, dripping in gore and terror and shit. It's just, it's an adult story for all intents. Kind of being friendly at points about that, but still. But I mean, it's like, it really wouldn't hurt parents to take a level of initiative on this. But I'm seeing this on different levels too. Like, again, if a kid can handle it, I don't really give a shit. Kid can handle it, they can handle it. My sister is watching Paranormal Activity now. Admittedly, she's 13 years old and she watches it with a bunch of other girls, so you kind of lose the fear effect when there's 9 other people in the room with you.
Also, Paranormal Activity is 98% jump scare.
Yep, which is the worst kind of scare. Like, if I wanted to be a prick, I could scream boo into the mic right now and potentially terrify someone in our audience. I still got to look at myself in the mirror, so I ain't going to do that.
But these guys are too busy using this episode to test out the subwoofers in the trunk of their car.
Yeah. That'd be great. Somebody's like, fuck, I don't understand any of this show. Just use it to test it. Yeah. Fuck. But yeah, like, if there's any parents who are listening to this and somehow don't already understand how the ESRB works, look it up. It's not hard. Seriously. We exist in the information age. There is not a damn thing on planet Earth outside of some pretty obscure facets of quantum physics and certain geopolitical issues and certain levels of philosophy, like the really obscure shit, not the shit you're going to run into every day, that you can't just Google to understand. Like when somebody's like, well, I don't really understand computers. Google. Well, I don't understand. Seriously, just go to any web browser on planet Earth. Go to Google
YouTube,
and type
YouTube. There's a how-to video.
Yeah, there's a wiki how on it. Like, we are at a point in human evolution where you can look up nearly fucking anything unless it's heinously specific. Like, you can't go to Google and be like, what shirt should I wear out of the clothing I own today? But everything
Although
else...
there is an app for that.
Guaranteed there is.
And you could ask people, you could ask people you know over the internet. And they
like, literally, you... Honestly, you don't even need to ask people you know. You just take a picture of your closet and a picture of your face and be like, what do I wear?
And what do I hang from this horrible thing?
This awful monstrosity I call a body. What do I put on it? But yeah, like, ignorance is no longer an excuse. Ignorance was never really an excuse to begin with. It's kind of like, I was drunk. I didn't see those guys when I drove through them with my car. You opt to get wasted, you hit those guys with your car. Ignorance doesn't work no more, folks. Sorry.
But she said she was 18.
Yeah, they all say they're 18. I mean...
Which is fine in Canada.
Yep. Thank you, moderately unsettling law.
Yes. They got a little better.
Yeah.
A little.
A little.
I mean, some provinces.
Yeah. We're not going to get into that. Statutory rape laws are not the discussion for tonight.
No. Bad parents are, apparently.
Well, I know what I'm picking now. Canada's statutory rape laws.
Hey! Well, we've got... Truthfully, if we want to complain about Canadian politics, we'd have all sorts of stuff to complain about.
Oh, yes.
Our government's shut down right now. I don't think I have anything to complain about.
Okay, that's fair. That is fair.
Our government has barely managed status quo for 3 decades.
Our government is now actually cutting the wages of prisoners. These are people who haven't gotten a pay raise since 1981, have to pay for everything, not adjusted for inflation, and they're cutting 30% of their wages. I'm like, so at what point do you just expect them to just devolve into ferity and just start eating one another? Because if that's what you're pushing for, that's not rehabilitation.
And that's one step closer to some awesome sports coverage.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Oh, like, shit, honestly, yeah. I think Canada should maybe, you know, just institute death race. There's legalized plenty of Saskatchewan sport where you could set up a track.
No, you know what? Let's just change Saskatchewan into a track because nobody does anything there anyway.
Just fence off Saskatchewan, let everyone loose, occasionally drop food, drugs, and guns in,
yep.
Run it all on TV.
Have a really high bridge that goes over Saskatchewan so people can actually get to the other side of the country.
You know what? The people in Edmonton don't need to go to Winnipeg.
It's
We're fine.
Well, yeah, it could be a giant, like, amusement park where you have roller coasters through the area so people get to get close to it but not actually get into the dangerous section.
Like hot air balloon tours.
Yeah.
I'm now picturing Escape from L.A. I am really just picturing Escape from L.A. in Saskatchewan with less wrecked building and more burnt wheat fields.
Somehow I feel like at some point there was a story or a movie or something that involved, because my state is square, like Colorado being a giant wall being built around it, and then it was just, hey, death prison.
That was a George Carlin comedy bit. He wanted to fence off the four rectangular states.
Yeah.
And here I just thought it was a good idea.
God damn it, I love George Carlin. Anyway.
George, god damn you, you died too soon. If anyone deserved immortality, George Carlin.
Nah, he wouldn't want to be immortal. He'd have gotten royally pissed.
Well, yeah, no.
Yeah,
if anyone
can
deserved
you imagine
be...
the bits that would have come out
oh,
of
oh, yeah.
It'd be it's like, I am 900 years old. Fuck all you.
That was Methuselah Carlin.
He would just say, fuck all of you, and people would laugh and clap because they would have no idea what that word means anymore.
Yes.
They would be like, this one crazy old man living out near Alpha Centauri. He's great. I'm, of course, assuming the species hasn't wiped itself out in 900 years. I have no reason to believe that.
Yeah. Well, George Carlin had no reason to believe that.
That's true. But yeah, back to the final point of my rant. Seriously, it's not hard. It really isn't. To look up this kind of information, just, like, you don't need to expose your kids to this shit, even if they're sitting there going, well, all my other friends are playing it. Like, there was an old adage, I don't know if people still use it, but I remember hearing it, if all your friends jumped off a bridge, would you? And when you're a kid, you're dumb enough to say yes. Guess
well, then
what?
They invented bungee jumping and kind of invalidated it.
Yeah, the problem with that, bolt cutters. All your friends
also
jumped off
zip
a bridge.
Lining.
Yep.
That's fun for a minute.
Dude, there are a million zip line stations set up all through southern Missouri. We went camping near Branson, and on the road from St. Louis to Branson, holy crap, there's nothing else to do around there, so it's just a zip line on every bluff.
Well, see, I got to do the longest one on the planet, which is fun while you're accelerating. But then you're just like, wow, there's still another 3/4 of a mile left.
You can
get out your phone and, you know.
Yeah, like I was this close to being like, I'm just going to get out my phone, check the Twitters, anything cool on eBay. And then they cocked up the landing procedure. So I'm just sitting there bouncing over this lake and I'm like, god damn it, guys.
Man,
zip lining, LOL.
That is the modern world right there. Like, it doesn't matter what you're doing. If it takes more than 30 seconds, then you have probably pulled out your phone and started doing something on it.
All right, Jim, you got to throw to someone else for pick.
All right, let's go with Johnny.
Don't call me that.
Well, too late.
He's not a Johnny.
I was going to wait until you just straight up did not respond to that at all.
I was tempted, but, you know, too much white noise.
I cut it.
Coming, you know what? Based on your comment there,
Jonathan. Then because I can do that.
It's okay. It's all right. I just give you crap.
Go for it.
I'm gonna throw out my pick to Louis C.K. based on what you just said there.
Yeah.
Because he did a thing on some late night show recently where he was talking about talking about how, like, he doesn't want his kid to have a cell phone or something. He's just like, we are afraid of being alone with ourselves, and that's why I think he's part just grumpy old man. But at the same time, there was a little bit of that. There was like, maybe there's some truth to that. If I get that bored and I can't handle, you know, sitting by myself for half a minute. And
well, at this point, there are specialists you can pay by the hour to teach you how to sit still and not really think about anything.
And that's disgusting.
Like, I love Have you seen the episode of Parks and Rec where Ron Swanson goes to yoga?
Like, no, he just, but I can only imagine.
He just stands there for an hour and a half and doesn't think about anything, and everyone thinks he's the most yogi there. And I'm like, yeah, because he's Ron fucking Swanson and nothing can stop him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just, you know, because when you said that, I'm looking at myself as I'm browsing the internet while you're telling your story and playing Candy Crush on my phone. I'm like, oh, God. What, man, the shit?
Yeah, dude,
apparently it is exhausting for some people to have a face-to-face conversation.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I feed off of that. It's really easy for me to get energy out of that.
Yeah, no, there are people who can have six different conversations going in chat clients and cell phones, but cannot manage to just look at a person and talk with some coffee.
My only advantage to text-based clients is I can edit my words so I am less offensive.
Which is only kind of valuable.
Yeah. Well, I'm like, I'm a jerk. Everybody I deal with knows this. So if I'm suddenly less obnoxious, they should catch on. I probably was going to burn them there and opted not to.
I don't get exhausted in face-to-face conversations, but yeah, I'm not very good at them.
Well, there are conversations you have that are exhausting. I'm not going to lie. There's some people who are just like...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
There are some people you cannot exchange information with.
But on top of that, that's a valuable thing. You need to have that experience of being exhausted by people. Not that you need to be exhausted, but you need to know what that's like. You need to understand it from the inside out. You have to
experience it.
Yeah, the weird message that these feelings are to be avoided, like the idea that, oh, like frustration is negative. No, you get frustrated because you want something to happen, and it will encourage you to do something.
For the love of Christ, nobody cares about your shoes. Get out of the fucking store.
I don't need to know about your business card collection.
Right. I mean, you shouldn't necessarily be frustrated all the time or annoyed all the time, but those feelings exist for a reason. And if you don't know how to deal with them, you are broken.
Well, you're also going to get fucked the first time you actually run into those scenarios and you're not prepared.
Exactly. And it's not just the first time. I mean, experiencing those things in certain formative years, in certain situations, prepare you to see a pattern in it throughout the future. And you can reach a point where, you know, your brain doesn't have enough new cells and things like that, where it's just not developed. You can't internalize that the way that you can when you're younger.
All right, so Johnny, you got to throw the pick to someone else.
No, I'm just going to wait.
Okay.
I got away with it.
Scott.
Okay, so I'm going to give it to Gundam The Origin Volume 3, which retells the Ramble Rawl arc of the TV series, which was really the high point, really.
A high point.
Well, okay, it's my favorite part. And then The Origin just, like, dials all that up to, like, 11, because, my God, that was intense.
My Indigo actually has it in.
Holy fuck. I've never seen it in the wild.
Yeah, it's incredible.
I only have one experience with Gundam, and my brother was really into it, and he was watching it one day while I was visiting home. And one of the characters on the screen was having some major existential crisis. They're sitting around a campfire, and then he says something deep and profound, and then just out of nowhere, a complete non sequitur, one of the other characters goes, this is good Java.
Oh, and yeah. Then that is the only response anyone can have to Katra.
Yeah,
that's all I remember about that show.
Actually, no,
anything related to it.
No, the proper response to anything Quarter says is to beat him to death with a claw hammer. That is the proper response.
I think you've been playing too much GTA 5.
No, I haven't. This is left over from high school.
No, there are four characters in Gundam Wing that are worth keeping around. Everyone else deserves hammer murder.
Yep. Troa has no personality, and no amount of bludgeoning will provide him with personality. And you can tell Sam I said that.
I will. Or she actually listens. She'll let you know.
Yeah. Oh, I know she's just going to disagree with me, and that's fine.
That's fine. We can get you both on the air, and you can fight it out.
Have a verbal brawl?
Yes.
I'm okay with that.
All right, so verbally hit you, Paul.
Okay, I guess I'll repeat myself. Speedrunners, it's a video game. It's available on Steam Early Access, and it is still buggy, but they are still working on it. It's basically 2D side-scrolling Mario Kart, and rather than racing, you know, to do a certain number of laps, you race to stay on the screen. So if somebody gets too far ahead and you're caught behind, you explode. And it has a cool graphical kind of mid-century superhero style. And in fact, right now it's on sale for just $5. So when will this drop?
I knew the date. It is the 9th.
I don't know if it'll still be on sale. So if you didn't get it, you're screwed.
Yeah, everybody.
And you're stuck paying the full price. Of what I presume is $12.
Yeah, $9.99 or whatever.
Suckers.
But it's really neat, and I think it's a. I mean, you can get like a 4-pack right now for $15, and have four of your friends, and have a. It's a legit party game.
What if you don't have four friends? I'm sure there's somebody who listens to our show who has no friends.
Oh, I presume, I will assume that people have minimal friends. Like, there's a certain segment of podcast listeners who are just looking to have conversations in their life.
They're desperate for human contact.
They can't directly participate with them.
Well, if they're really desperate for human contact, they could always just message us and we will, you know, pile abuse on them. It's kind of the same thing.
Yes. Yes, we will explain why exactly you don't need con speed dating to get a girl.
Oh, shit! I forgot. I was going to message you when I was at work today. I have the worst idea for a panel ever.
Oh, God, what is it?
Mechanical Pleasure, a guide to mecha and sex.
Oh, God, that'd pass.
I know it would! I don't actually want to put any thought into this, because the worst part is we would get people who actually want to know.
We would not show up out of protest. Like, this would be some sort of art statement.
Actually, no.
Protest your own panel.
Yes.
No, we show up in fedoras and Groucho masks.
Okay.
Okay, I think we just got a panel that is a go. Fuck.
We gotta try it. Okay, so I'm gonna pull one off the Q&A pile, which you can just tweet at me or Facebook or whatever. But someone would like to know, which do you think is the most important meal of the day?
The one that I eat. The only one I eat.
Yeah, the one where I actually eat food. Yeah. Like, I start, well, I'll use today as an example because today is a fairly run-of-the-mill day. I start my day. I'm in a mad panic to get ready for work. I wash the dishes from the night before. I scramble 3 eggs, cook 3 large strips of bacon, brew 4 cups of coffee, consume the entire thing, and run out the door. It works out to about 1,000 calories and gives me the energy I need to last the next 4 hours until lunch, at which point I scrounge up something and eat it. Like, I will say breakfast because it's the only one that gets any focus in my day.
Can I just say that that's an incredible list of things that you do while in a mad panic to get to work?
Yep.
Yeah,
usually,
that
when
is
I'm
impressive.
In a mad panic to get to work, it's like I granola will maybe shove some, a spoonful of peanut butter down my throat. Like...
You would
there have been days where I have woken up, walked to the fridge, drunk milk out of the carton, dropped a tablespoon of hot sauce down my mouth, and counted on there being some form of caffeine near work.
Yeah, mad panic to get to work does not involve doing dishes.
And then you have to double check that you have pants on.
Yes.
That's it. I'm putting clothing on.
Well,
while
no,
I'm
cooking the bacon
one hand is
confirms
in the sink,
that you have pants on.
One hand is in a shirt. I've got a pant around one leg. I'm trying to get the sock on at the same time. The coffee finishes brewing, so now the hand that's in the shirt is grabbing the coffee mug to drink.
Wow. That is...
I am a professional multitasker.
That is dedication to...
Yep. To a good breakfast?
I'm not sure
no,
what sort of
no, to sleeping that, an extra 15 minutes.
Damn right!
That's what's dedication to.
See, well, that's my thing is, I will sleep the extra 15 minutes, and I'll just, fuck it, I'll just be hungry.
I can't do hungry, man. I shake already. Like, if I go without food for more than 4 hours outside of sleep, I can mix paint with my fingers. Which would be great if I worked at Canadian Tire, but I don't. So.
Okay. So that's Q&A. We're going to try and do this regularly. We'll see.
Cool.
But I guess we're on to our topic. This is our second attempt at it because Skype broke. I choose to blame Jim for mentioning Iron Man, the thing that kills podcasts.
What the fuck did Iron Man have to do with any of that? He said, looking at the Iron Man statue on his desk.
See, now we've both said Iron Man, and now this episode will fail. It just happens.
So show me on the doll where fun touched you.
Yes, we are talking about the value of fun in its various forms and how it can and cannot affect opinions of things. We are not going to define fun because that's bullshit.
That is heinous bullshit.
Fun is a vague, amorphous term. You have an easier time defining fun than defining love in the English language, but that's really about it.
Nope. No, because HK47 has defined love for us all. HK47 never defined fun.
HK47 defined a lot of things, but his definition of love, I find, is lacking.
No, I like it.
Oh, I like it, but I still find it lacks a certain je ne sais quoi.
Well, he is a killer robot. His understanding of humans is somewhat limited.
Exactly. So his is fun from a mechanical perspective. From a mechanical perspective.
Is that gonna be in your panel?
Yes.
Yes. HK47.
Oh God, what have we done?
We are terrible people.
Yes, we are, and we're gonna drag a whole bunch of congoers down with us.
I'll drink to that.
I was just reminded of something. Can I pick something else?
Sure, why not?
It's completely right. Can I just derail the entire conversation here?
Yeah, go for it.
Have you guys heard of Train Simulator 2014?
Yes.
Have you heard of Farming Simulator 2013?
No. Train Simulator 2014. It's a $60 game on Steam. Apparently, every single piece of DLC for it is $20. And if you were to buy all of the DLC for the game, it would cost over $3,000.
That's insane, even by my standards.
And here's the thing. It is affordable. Like, there are Train Simulator exists for guys who make model railroads in their basement. That is affordable in comparison to model railroading.
Yeah.
I mean, all things considered. And let's just bring this back around to the topic. If that's your idea of fun, more power to you, sir.
Yeah, but for the rest of the world, that's terrifying.
Yeah, but when I make fun of you,
hey,
understand?
Then we all get fun out of it
as well.
If you
we
make
all
fun
get
of them,
a little bit of
guys
fun
can't hear you
out of this
because their head's stuck in a train tunnel.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I reference Farm Simulator because I live on Prince Edward Island, which is full of farms, and I get people who
and
come
tourists.
Yep,
and drunk people
and fishermen and racists. A lot of racists, but people come into work. And they buy Farm Simulator. And I look at them and I go, what? What? That's like buying a golf simulator here. What are you doing? But
see, no, I can understand Golf Simulator because Prince Edward Island cannot have a decent course on it.
It has 4 golf courses.
Yeah, I can't imagine any of them are any good.
Apparently, I think it's Eagles Glen keeps winding up in the top 10 in Canada.
Yeah, that does not mean anything.
I don't know. I don't play golf. I don't understand golf. I look at it and I'm like, I hit a ball.
Weird,
it's,
man. Are we really having a golf conversation?
It's a golf argument.
We are having a golf argument, and my Scottish blood will not settle.
Yeah, remember how we were talking about how it's important to be frustrated? I'm feeling that importance right now.
And the exhaustion is just settling in.
All right. So I guess my thesis here is that... it's not fuck golf, but that fun, while valuable on an individual subjective basis, is largely valueless in a discussion of anything.
Well, there's no objective basis for it. Like build something with a base intent of hopefully this will be enjoyable.
Well, fun is a conclusion. If all you can say at the end of it is that you had fun. That is you begging the question.
Well, good for you. You had fun.
I, I disagree that it has no value anywhere. I mean, if you are, because I mean, if we're talking about criticism, specifically like game criticism and that sort of thing, fun is important from the perspective of, I am a person who played this and I either enjoy or don't enjoy these type of games and I had fun with this. You know, if a game is intended to bring out fun and allow you to, you know, experience that and it succeeds from the point of view of the reviewer, then absolutely it is a valuable contribution.
Well, here's the thing, is that fun is a conclusion you come to. It's like, hey, this hit these notes, push these buttons for me.
Yes.
And then I had fun.
Yes. Assuming you can articulate that, most people can't.
Yeah.
Yes.
This but again, the following even then, releases. There are things that you enjoy that are not fun. Like, there are things that are engaging. Like horror movies, they're not exactly fun.
Well, they can be. It depends on the movie.
But literally the experience of frightening yourself for cathartic value.
Yeah, for the most part, most people will not derive fun from a horror film. The New Evil Dead, for example, I had a blast watching. Loved the shit out of it. Everything in it, it was fun as fuck to watch. For me. I'm also a big fan of slashers. I love gore, and I'm sorry, the scene with the box cutter was gorgeous. Normal people are going to get thrown off by that.
I think one of the big things is fun comes from... Fun isn't necessarily something you can't nail down. I think people can pretty well agree that there are a lot of things that humans find really fun across the board.
Cognitive science is improving every day to explain fun.
Well, right. But the thing is that what any individual person finds fun is, and what they look for to have fun and how they build their expectations really varies. Like, somebody could find discovery in a game fun. Someone else could find mastery very fun. And those are very, very different things. And so you can, I think if you're talking about if a particular game was fun, that is valuable in as far as you're able to label the type of fun or why you had fun and what you look for, that kind of thing. But then you've already left the fun as the important part. You're basically saying this particular mechanic worked. This experience brought me joy, etc. And you keep coming back to, in order to for fun to have value in criticism, you must be articulated. And then the articulation, and that's the part of the critique that matters. So it's kind of not a catch-22, but sort of.
Well, the fun does have a certain circularity standpoint. It, like, you can use fun to say, this is why this was good to me. This is why that was appealing to me. You can use it to validate part of your argument, at least on an empirical level. But
Here are the ways in which this game facilitated the fun that I was having. You know, here are the specific aspects of the game that not only did I have fun with, but were clearly specifically designed to elicit that response from me and succeeded. So, you know, it's because there's a big difference between I had fun with a terrible game that, you know, I had fun because I was breaking its systems and doing what it didn't intend versus I had fun following the rules and playing the game within the realm of what it was trying to do.
Like, as intended. And we talk a lot about sort of having fun at the expense of bad things on this show with some frequency.
Yeah. Well,
like, we're all Mystery Science Theater 3000 fans. We get that there is something to watching Showa era Godzilla movies and going, yes, no, that is exactly how computer science works, Jet Jaguar.
Yeah, this is a scene where Godzilla's head is on fire and the actor is nearly suffocating. This is fucking hilarious. Yeah.
Speaking of which, if you're one of those people out there who doesn't have three friends that you can share a four pack with, MST3K, make those guys your friends.
Yeah.
Rift Tracks.
And Rift Tracks, their successor state. Yes. Very much so.
But I mean, well, have you ever... Scott, you've played Mechton Zeta, right?
Yes.
Okay.
It might have been one of the earlier editions of Mechton.
But Mechton, I found fun. I had a lot of enjoyment sitting down, working with the life path system, working with the character stats system, even the way they did a point design system for building giant robots and managing to actually kind of bring together the numerous different series, like everything from Getter to Gundam to Gunbuster to fucking Godanner and everything in between, like combining them all together on a systemic level. I had a blast doing this, but it was a well-designed system. I had fun because it was a well-designed system, because I can point to various facets and go, these are things I enjoyed in this mechanically. Whereas I will point directly at Shadowrun and go, the reason I didn't have fun is because your decking system is shit and hasn't been improved since at least second edition, if not first. And that's because I don't quite remember if I played first, but I know I played second and everything since. And it still hasn't been fixed. Like, fun is an objective. Like, nobody sits down to make a game and goes, I want this to be serious and completely devoid of entertainment value. If you want to do that, you're building a reference manual. And even then,
Jane's fighting ships, I'm sure.
Well, that's the thing. People still derive fun out of reference manuals.
Well, and Jane's fighting ships is for a game.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's the thing is, I'm not going to criticize someone else's fun, but do people get fun out of reference manuals, or do they get some kind of other satisfaction?
Well, yeah, some form of enjoyment.
Yeah, like, and that's the thing is, I don't think it's. I don't want to define fun. I don't want to define fun, but I think that people generally have an idea of fun as something joyful, and joy comes from surprise and interactivity. Whereas with a reference manual, you might get satisfaction from what you learn, or you know, suspicions confirmed, or mastery. But I don't know.
There
that
is something to be said for owning the entire Osprey line and knowing everything about Prussian polearm units.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. Well, and I'm not, I mean, sure that's.
But I don't think that's fun.
Exactly. And I'm not going to judge someone's fun. If somebody legitimately thinks that's fun, I can't argue that. I cannot say, well, something else is going on inside your brain. But but if somebody says that that's fun, chances are they don't really mean that.
Well, how many of us have derived actual fun? Like, how many of us have sat down, read a player's handbook, and been like, man, that was fun? So much as you're like, okay, now I've got the knowledge, now I can go play D&D.
That there's a handful of game books that are fun to read in and of themselves. Those are for comedy
games. Right,
because
they're cleverly written or whatever, yeah.
Like Paranoia or...
Paranoia is fun no matter how you slice it.
Human Occupied Landfill. Cute and Fuzzy Cockfighting Seizure Monster is hilarious if you've ever watched an episode of Pokemon.
But these are also games that are clearly designed with comedy in mind.
Cute and Fuzzy Cockfighting Seizure Monsters was not designed with comedy in mind.
Really?
But the authors clearly understood the genre and were just like, no, this is exactly what happens. Let's play this with a straight face, and then everyone else laughed at how ridiculous the Pokemon world sounds.
I'm still not entirely clear why I would have my Charizard attack the other Pokemon instead of the trainer. So...
It's not like there's more than two police officers in the entire country, right?
Yeah, exactly. There is one nurse and one cop. You know what? If I have Charizard burn them too, I can go on a criminal rampage. Grand Theft Auto Pokemon.
Why is Team Rocket so ineffective?
By and large, because they're remarkably non-violent.
Isn't it like a nuclear option, though? If your Pokemon attacks the other trainer, the other Pokemon's going to attack you, and you're just going to die.
That's fine. You know what? Like,
go out in a blaze of glory.
You know what? I've got a Snorlax I can hide behind. I don't need him for anything.
No, you know what? You get fucking Gyarados. He's enormous and has, like, a fucking Hyper Beam. Gyarados, burn the building down. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm out.
Or Jigglypuff put everybody asleep and just cut necks.
Yep.
Cutting bitches.
I think what this really goes to show is this is why all of the trainers are children.
Yeah, because adults murder one another.
They don't think like this.
Not with the Grand Theft Auto, they don't.
I should take the exact same approach to like MMA and...
Well, MMA is specifically designed to favor Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah.
It's why you don't see any Krav Maga experts.
It's why you don't see any actual Muay Thai masters in there wrecking shit.
Well, Muay Thai, you can make more money in Thailand doing. Sorry. But yeah, like, fun. I'm not going to shit on anyone, because Jim and I have an irrational enjoyment of telling meandering non-sequitur stories while pretending to be 1930s blues men.
Yep, it's great!
There is a vague scoring system we maintain between us as to how non-sequitur we can get, while also including the most ridiculous details. But I would never say that Jim won the story that started the episode.
We just continue forward to the next round. That's all it is. Now, I don't know if anybody else enjoys those.
I want to hear how old Romanesco Scrotum got his name.
Well, this one time
we was walking through Iowa.
I hate Iowa.
Of course we do.
Are we actually doing this right now?
No.
Okay. Because we can. I mean, I'm fine with it. We're going to have to open a panel with that at some point, you know? Like, we're going to at least have to walk in dressed like old jazz musicians with no shoes. Even if we just take our shoes off at the door.
Fine. I will also pack a Blues Brothers costume.
Deal.
You can be Elwood.
I need to steal a car.
Fair enough.
There is somebody in Charlottetown with a Blues Brothers car. Like, specifically, the guy's an enormous Dan Aykroyd fan. I know this because he was crying outside when Dan had to go back onto his bus because he was too wasted to continue his set. I have seen Dan Aykroyd get drunk and be incapable of singing the blues.
That's something to sing the blues about.
Yeah. No, it was great. I got really wrecked that night because I got, like, 6 free bottles of wine out of it.
God. Okay. So other points we have. Okay, so...
Scott, why don't you present what the origin of this fun is not valid critique?
Okay,
fun is not fun.
So how I came to this conclusion of why fun is bullshit is that I called out the guys on Fear the Boot for being apologists for Shadowrun. Not specifically the game mechanics, but the setting. And I was like, they made a series of points that were absolutely that were full of shit, and I called them on it. And the only real response I got from anyone is that someone said, but I had fun playing Shadowrun. At which point I'm like, no fucking shit. You spent 6 hours on a Saturday with your friends. You could have huffed paint and had fun.
That is true.
That is true. You have not added to my discussion of this topic at all. Good day.
She's going to say, fun should never be a response to criticism, because then that's where, you know, we mentioned it earlier. Fun is the final form. Fun is your final end. Like, you're not responding to points when you say that I had fun. That doesn't address anything involved there. You know, it is your subjective experience. And then, you know, in that way, I disagreed with you that fun is at times valid in criticism. It is never valid in response to criticism. I had fun watching Pacific Rim. I would not at all
tread lightly.
I would not at all have any problem with anybody who decided to criticize the plot, the characterization, most of the acting, you know, the rampant cliches of that movie. There are, as a film, and as someone who is on his own podcast going through, you know, what are considered some of the greatest movies of all time and, like, slowly ranking those, Pacific Rim will never join the ranks of, you know, Lawrence of Arabia or, you know, even like Blazing Saddles or the Blues Brothers. But Pacific Rim is a fun movie, you know, for the 2 hours I spent in it or whatever it was, I had a ton of fun. But if somebody says, well, it was full of cliches, and I go, well, I had fun. And
yeah, you're not invalidating criticism.
I'm going to disagree with you on whether or not it could join the ranks of those films. Not Lawrence Arabia. That's perhaps.
Yeah, that's a
like,
bit.
Is it literally top 100 material?
But the thing is that you, when you watch the movie, you perceive the intent of it. I mean, some people will strongly disagree with me on this, but my thought is there is a sort of clarity of vision that especially in movies. Movies are very straightforward, you know, theatrical films are a straightforward medium. And you understand what that movie is trying to do. And you might have your opinion might be that what it's trying to do does not elevate the art form or something like that. Therefore, it could not be, you know, held in high regard. But you can judge the craft based on how well it does these things that it tells you it's trying to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that Pacific Rim dramatically succeeds at how it presents itself. It presents itself as, I'm going to do this thing.
I want giant robots does it. Punching giant monsters.
Right, and then it does
and
it.
My God, if it is not the best giant robot, giant monster punching movie ever. Yeah,
it sets its objective and completes it quite successfully.
Oh, yeah.
Right, and that's what craft is about. That's what art is about. But the only, the place where you would say, where it doesn't, you know, transcend is exactly that, is that the film does not attempt to transcend its medium, or that it does not attempt to have some kind of other meaning other than awesome punching, you know, punching monsters.
Yeah,
it's not like Citizen I have King. Bookshelves, right? Like I have bookshelves, and they are not works of art as bookshelves go.
Well, they're not.
But
they're,
they hold up all my books.
Bookshelves can't be a work of art anyway.
Yeah,
but the. Well, and I would disagree with that. But anyway,
No, because their primary purpose is to hold books.
Their primary purpose, yes, but that doesn't.
Yeah,
mean
but that comes
you
into
can't.
You can get craftsmanship and everything else out of that as well.
Yeah, like, and you can and create I think that's what sets apart. I think that's why you'd never see Pacific Rim join the ranks. And let me say again, I loved Pacific Rim. You know, if you want to see giant robots punch giant monsters in the face, there is no better option than Pacific Rim at the moment. You know, absolutely, I would watch it again. I would watch it four or five times before I watched Lawrence of Arabia again. But because it does not attempt to do anything other than present giant robots punching giant monsters in the face... You know, and if it does attempt to do anything else like that, give social commentary or political commentary, if those attempts are in there at all.
There's questions of human identity packed in there, but that's fairly stock fare for Del Toro.
Yeah, it's not handled with any sort of real grace or any sort of real, you know, there's nothing new being said about anything that happens in that movie. That's why I would say that it does not transcend the transcend into those, you know, greatest movies of all time sort of list. It is a hell of a lot of fun, and it'll stick around and it'll be on my shelf, you know, for a long time to come. But at the same time, you'll notice that nothing that we've said back and forth here have anything to do with, other than to say yes, I enjoyed it, it have nothing to do with fun. The criticism that you can give, or the responses that you have to it, can't relate to the experience you had, because there's nothing objective there. You know, my experience of Pacific Rim does not have any sort of response to any sort of criticism one way or the other towards the movie.
And that's especially
how I
work true.
I worked the topic back in.
That's especially true of the origin subject of tabletop role-playing games, where the very design of those games is to create space where you provide the fun. You bring so much material, and even a poorly designed one has so many spaces where everybody at the table brings their own material that you can have a terribly designed game, and that's still just such a small portion of what your experience is. Well, so yeah, you can have a lot of fun because you bring the fun. And so ultimately the criticism isn't about what you and your friends did at the table. It's of the mechanics and what it supports for you and your friends to do at the table with a certain kind of ease or consistency.
Did any of you guys play Last Unicorn's Star Trek TNG RPG?
No.
No.
Okay. Mechanically, it's god-awful.
Is this Peter S. Beagle matched with Gene Roddenberry? I'm confused.
No, Last Unicorn is
Last Unicorn was the publishing company.
Oh, okay.
It's a publishing company that made a Star Trek game.
Yeah,
what
and it's
the hell?
No. Mechanically, it's terrible. The book is poorly edited. Like, we had to house rule most of the character creation. The character creation's cumbersome as fuck. It's not as bad as Palladium, but it's still pretty bad. There's this use of like a kind of a randomized luck die that's present in nearly every roll, depending on which page you read the rules from. Because sometimes it's in there and sometimes it's not, except if it's a catastrophic scenario sort of thing. Like, the editing on it is god-awful, which makes the mechanics bleed and basically hemorrhage constantly. Because you don't know what rules you're supposed to be adhering to based on what page you're looking at. So we house-ruled the shit out of it. Like, we just basically took their base mechanics and made everything up as we went along. We had a blast. It was a great game. It was fun as hell. And it felt a lot like classic TOS. But this was because of what we brought to the table. Like, on a mechanical objective, like, objectively, I look at the game and I'm like, this is a terrible fucking game. Like, there is no reason for me to sell this to anybody. If I was working in a shop and somebody's like, should I buy this? No, not even a little bit. Put it down, walk away. But
especially because it was kind of also competing with the Decipher game that came out like 18 months before it.
Yep. But on a fun level, like, if we just look at fun, I had a blast. Like, I tried to sell my friends on this. I was like, you guys should pick this up so we all have access to the rule book so the character creation goes a little bit faster instead of just one book being spread around 8 people. We never did get to ship-to-ship combat, which was absolutely terrifying to read. But
like, that's why I almost always find games, when game criticism, to kind of be weird beforehand. It's almost always like when you're not having fun or when your game doesn't do what you wish it could, that's when we can examine the material and say, you need to be playing a different game. Because if you're already playing the game you want to play, criticism doesn't help you. Obviously there can be times where
you're critiquing the game and you're critiquing the group.
Yep.
Yeah, and
people are bad at distinguishing that sometimes.
Exactly.
Well, if I wanted to, we could have played GURPS Final Frontier instead. We could have.
Yes.
Not sure why I would as a person, and I'd have to look in the mirror and know that I played GURPS for more than 20 minutes, but that's me.
Would hamper your morning routine.
Yeah. Oh, I'd God. Like, fuck. I played GURPS.
I don't have time to make eggs because I have to deal with the crisis that is being a GURPS player.
Yep. The absolute identity shattering awareness that I played GURPS as a human being. But yeah.
Like, yeah. And I think, you know, there's a weird criticism on the internet, especially, has hit a weird place. Like, when you can receive death threats for a negative review for a game that hasn't come out.
Oh, not
out
even
yet.
A negative review.
Let's go with like, a 9 out of 10.
Like 9 out of 10.
5. Shall we? Let's just pull the veil right off there.
And before the game has even released, so no one else has played it other than the reviewers. Like, are you kidding me? This is, you've hit a point where you know, clearly people can no longer distinguish the difference between criticism of the object and criticism of themselves. I like this and you don't like it, so therefore you must not like me. And thus you are a terrible person because you don't like what?
I think it goes even further than just dislike. Like, it's you are criticizing this, therefore you are actually personally attacking me. You hate me as an individual, so I am going to respond in kind. It's absurd. It goes so far beyond rationality.
I was afraid to give Diablo 3 a 7 out of 10. Like, literally.
Yeah, I read that, and I went, I'm inclined to kind of give it lower than that slightly at points, but I agreed with the points you brought up.
Part of it was I have played a ton of Diablo knockoffs in the past couple of years because Sam gets assigned to review them and I help her out. So I've literally played some of the worst things to ever be released. Like, I'm sorry, Dungeon Hunter Alliance.
But you had fun with them, right?
No.
No!
Like, there was this point where we were playing Realms of the Ancient Warrior, I think was the title. And we're sitting there, and we're making fun of the plot. and we have given up on actually playing the game. Like, we are running past the mobs and just dropping AoEs and damage over time effects as fast as we can, just to finish the thing, to say we finished it, to write the damn review. And no fun was had by anyone, even mockingly.
See, I think it's I think it's perfectly legitimate to say this game was so bad, I stopped at this point, and that's your review. I think that's legitimate.
No, that's perfectly legitimate, but RP Gamer standards demand that we see in end credits before we can. Like, it's just an editorial policy.
Yeah, I got in trouble for reviewing negatively a game that was so badly put together that I couldn't get it to the table. Like, despite trying multiple times and having a willing crowd at one point, I was like, this makes no sense, and I have to reference things that are on a website that doesn't exist anymore. So I wrote the review, and I got in trouble for that. Like, we don't like to post reviews that don't have, that weren't actually played. I was like, are you kidding me?
You play it then.
You can't play this game.
Like, this game is unplayable.
Yeah.
Three out of ten.
Yeah, but that's not bullshit right there.
That's 0 out of 10.
Fuck yeah, exactly. This game is
unplayable. I don't know. I was just coming up with a number.
Three out of ten. I could still burn the pages for warmth if I need to.
Yes.
Even your mom. Yeah, there you go.
There was art. There were three pictures I liked.
That is
at some point, someone
though,
who is a worthwhile human being may have been paid a few dollars for their contributions to this. So somebody may have used that money well.
I don't believe that for a second. Nobody who is a worthwhile human being contributed to that project.
It doesn't even matter if they're a worthwhile human being. Their money somewhere went back into the economy. And
I'm
so,
leaving a window open that enslaved people worked on this.
Threw themselves into a lake. Maybe somebody associated with E.T. currently has a bag full of money buried in the car with them in the bottom of some Utah fucking canal. You don't know that.
That's all right. They removed themselves from the gene pool then. You know, like, there are positives to any sort of scenario.
One out of ten developer suicide, really. Oh, my God. Okay, I'm using that. No, like right there. If I ever review anything and I have any indication a dev committed suicide, I will give it a 1 out of 10.
Okay.
That is fair.
Like someone killed themselves over this game.
Every human life lost in the course of the design of this game increases its rating by 1. There you go. Developers want to get me to give them a perfect score, they got to kill 10 staff.
There should be a code for that. Like little skulls on the back of the box or something like that. Like the number of people who were crushed beneath this horrible monster.
Well, there are game developers that will list like the babies that were born during production or the
exactly,
amount
production
of takeout
babies.
They ordered.
Yeah, so how many people died?
Production corpses.
We are thankful for the following deaths with regards to the development of our game. It got us on IGN. Thanks.
Your last breath propelled this game to the end.
Yep. For hate's sake, I spit my last breath at thee.
So yeah, fun.
Fun.
I don't know. It's obviously very important, but
well, I don't think it's as necessarily as important as engagement, which includes.
Oh yeah, it's important in when that's what you're trying to do. I mean, that's fun. Everybody likes fun. Fun's good, but you can't use it as a defense of a criticism from a perspective that does not include like your gaming group or something that is beyond your own little tastes and whims.
Well, yeah. let's swing it to the other side for a second. And you guys have all played Munchkin, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. No. I played Munchkin. Really?
No.
Don't bother.
Hey.
That's
successfully avoided.
That's
Munchkin
pretty much then. How everybody reacts is that they're like, hey, we got Munchkin, but yeah, fuck it.
Okay, I like
it's
Munchkin.
Fun.
Are you
going to
be?
But
maybe.
Actually, that's what I'm going to use as the example. Like, I've played Munchkin numerous times over the years. My friends refuse to play with me now, mostly because of a match in which I went from level 2 to level 10 in the space of a single hand. But I'm a prick. I always have fun when I play Munchkin, but I always make it fun for me when I play Munchkin. But on a base level, most of the people I play with can't stand Munchkin. They're like, it's clunky, it's not particularly enjoyable, and the moment you win, I feel like a chump.
Well, it is incredibly antagonistic.
Oh, yeah, you hate your friends for it.
Like, it's diplomacy without any of the thought.
Diplomacy is not a fun game.
Well, yeah, diplomacy is not fun either, but you at least have to sit there and think about it. Like, you could enjoy it as an intellectual exercise with people you do not care about.
It's enjoyable, but it is not a fun game. You it is nerve-wracking and terrible, and we needed to eat more often during the course of that game, but yeah.
And even something like Gloom. Have you played Gloom?
Nope.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about Gloom is that the mechanical level of it is just you strategically laying cards on top of other cards. It's just about positioning. The fun of Gloom is that positioning you have to generate a narrative for your positioning. So it's not enough to say, hey, I play this 10-point card on top of my guy. You have to be like, oh, you know, the poor professor, you know, he went to the fair and was laughed at, and that's why he has 10 points.
Yeah, that's a situation where I have issues with
like there's
that.
A big push in a lot of card and board games to make it about the social dynamic and not necessarily about having an actual fun mechanic.
Yeah, and I think that's a sort of weird kind of cop-out mechanic, I feel like, because that's almost acknowledging that the fun of the game is not provided by the game itself. We need you to present it. Because
like,
there's a certain
like apples
amount
to apples, you can play that in sort of the clinical, no, this is the most appropriate match sort of way.
It sucks if you do, though.
And it sucks, because there's the one guy at the group in the group who does that. I'm like, no! James T. Kirk and Banana Bread! Come on, can't you see it?
But yeah, but I mean, like, that's playing the game. That's playing a different game than what the designers intended. It's something else entirely.
Oh, really? I think they made a game that you can interpret.
Okay,
that's the part of the fun of the mechanic, and the idea is that is to get people, basically convince people with your clever play and reading the tone of the room and reading the people you know to get them to choose the card that you play. And if you're playing to somebody who is that clinical dude, then you know what to play to him.
Yeah. But the thing is, there's a difference between apples to apples and Gloom. And my problem with Gloom is that part of what they do is they say that they seem to almost acknowledge that the mechanics are not good enough to carry the entertainment of the game. And so you need to fill in the blanks. And if all you do is sit down,
to storytell over the top.
Yes. Because the cards themselves will say, oh, you know,
like it is a narrative, like it's a story prompt, like you get from your writing.
Yeah. And so it's a tool. It's essentially just a procedural tool to get you to tell a certain type of story or a certain event or theme.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's always an event, like you're shunned by society or you get eaten by ducks. Or
how something. Interactive is that game? Like, how much control do you have over those events?
You play the card with the event on it.
Yeah.
Right, but how much control do you have? Like, do you have a lot of choice, or is it pretty random?
It's pretty random.
It's pretty random. Like, the hands are decent sized that you can play them, but eventually you're going to be like, yeah, I have to tell a story about this guy.
Well, right. More importantly, you don't have to tell a story about anything. Like, that's something that the designers have thrown in there and said, you know what, it's a lot more fun if you tell a story. But otherwise, because every time that I've sat down with Gloom and tried to play it with other people, I've been like, now they say to kind of describe it, and then what they do is we read off the names of the cards and then go no further with it, and the game has not made it to the table very often, or as often as I think it could, compared to some of the other games where the fun and the mechanics support that rather than just tacking it on at the end.
Yeah, well, what you're describing is not interaction. That's why Gloom, I mean, assuming that I fully understand the way you're describing, there is not interaction there. It's a random procedural tool that produces these cards, and then even if you tell a story based on those cards,
there wasn't
an interactivity. And also, exactly, you can win or lose no matter how nonsensical your story was, it doesn't matter. And there is no dynamic and there is no interactivity. It's pure procedure, and that's just stupid. Regardless, even if the design of the game was you have to tell this story to move on, and that's even the point of it. That's still dumb as hell.
Yeah, and then you buy Cthulhu Gloom, and they've replaced actual events with shout-outs to Lovecraft stories that half the table will understand.
Okay, can we take a sec here to rip on the sheer proliferation of jury-rigging Cthulhu into random shit now? Because I'm getting fucking tired of it.
Yeah. That's a whole other episode.
Cthulhu is the hipster zombie.
Yeah, but yes. Unto itself, that's bullshit. Like, Cthulhu,
I'm aware. I'm just saying.
Was the worst munchkin I've ever fucking played. Cthulhu Dice, I nearly punched my best friend over. Like, you can't just jury rig Lovecraft into something and it makes it good. No, Lovecraft makes horrible things. So usually mixing that into your stew pot makes it even worse.
Like, Lovecraft is a very specific flavor that does not go with many things. It is the anti-steampunk.
It's pistachio like, and hot sauce. Stop trying
like
to
a progressive
it in my
society
breakfast cereal.
With anything interesting going on in it.
Yes.
Fuck. It's turning a Gundam Age all over again.
But yep. I think, you know.
Sorry, I had to do that. That was seriously. Like, it's.
No, that some things need to be said, Jim.
Yeah.
I don't know, that was kind of a tangent, but you know, when it comes to fun in a game like that, I'm always annoyed when a game says, "Oh, and then it's more fun if you do such and such that isn't actually supported by the rules." Where you have something like Battlestar Galactica or Shadows Over Camelot, where the process of playing the game produces a narrative that is in itself fun, and you know, you have fun and are telling a story at the same time, and it's all built on and supported by the game rules themselves.
And they feed into each other. Where if you don't if you tell a story in a certain way, it affects you. It doesn't you don't just go, "Oh, well, that weird thing happened, move on to the next stage of the game."
Yeah, and if you're not involved in those games and part of that story that's being told, you're not playing the game. You know, you have to be part of that, and it forces you into that, and it supports all of that. And it's in a case like that where I think you can absolutely, you know, to go back to the point of is there use of criticizing fun? I think it's absolutely useful to say that, well, Gloom says you can have more fun, but doesn't support it. Where BSG not only is
like
fun,
BSG
but supports
works
it as well
with people who do not watch the show.
Yeah,
like they just picked a character and that's a name on a card to them.
Yeah, you don't have to have any investment in the world. It helps. It makes it more entertaining. There are certain things that make more sense when you have it. But even if you don't, it's still that group dynamic that's being built. You know, that is above anything that the theme itself brings to the table. Probably breaks a little bit with the new Caprica expansion, because then things get a little weird and
they hit critical mass on expansions the previous expansion.
Well, that was the Pegasus expansion had new Caprica in it, and that was the first expansion. That was a little like, what?
No, there's like been two more since then.
I know there have been two more since then. And I can't bring myself to buy them because even with the first expansion, I'm like,
too much shit going on.
you get to a certain point, and then the game completely changes, and you're like, what the hell? Why? What are we doing right now?
What did I sign on for?
Why did the ship just go away? I'm confused. We were all worried about the ship, and now it's what?
Whose pants are these?
And then we're all angels. Wait,
what?
Or only Starbuck is? I don't know.
Who knows?
It's all fucked up. It's right there.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So I had fun.
Yeah, this was a fun talk, even the second time.
It worked out, right?
It worked out. For those of you who are curious as to how the first time went, imagine an extra 20 minutes of us discussing the character of Socrates and the
chronology of the Platonic dialogues.
Yeah. Also an incredibly cruel, hateful Shadowrun rant.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we managed to avoid most of the Shadowrun rant and all of the Rifts discussion. I'm impressed with...
Do we want to talk about Rifts?
No,
but I will also mention that I was wrong about the history of Athens when Socrates was executed, because at that point, it was a democracy that had just been that had just thrown off Spartan domination.
Okay. Well, then we will accept your transition from the lost episode.
Yes.
Redacted, redacted, redacted.
Just beep it out. So people
beef it out.
Yeah. We had a lost episode. We forgot it. We lost it on the way to the bank.
This was much lower key as well.
Yeah.
We didn't rant as much, but I think we stayed more on topic.
Ish.
Well, I think we more directly address the nature of fun.
Yes.
And it shouldn't work as a counterargument. Like, you can have fun with nearly anything. Like
huff and paint.
Well, yeah. Some people have fun, like, some people have fun beating their girlfriend. You know what? It doesn't justify the action. I know I'm taking it far there, but I was actually going to say knife and kids, so.
Yeah, so I don't think that, yeah, I don't think.
As far as you could have.
I don't think that has anything to do with, did I have fun with certain shitty 90s derivative RPG?
the example is kind of valid.
You're gonna assume that those are the same people. Those are
yes. Hey, Rifts players Rifts, and kid knifers are the same.
Sometimes Rifts, sometimes knife.
Yeah, exactly. You're sometimes like, oh shit, the Rifts group can't get together, but that kindergarten still opens. So
the Venn diagram that nobody needs to see.
Yeah. If that exists, please. If I am talking about you and you are listening to this show, please, please seek mental health.
That's the one guy who doesn't have enough friends.
Yeah, but you know what? He can go get therapy and he can get friends. Orderlies are nice people.
And at the very least, the other people in the, you know, discussion group.
Yeah, group therapy, those guys can be good.
Yeah. They can't be any worse. Right?
That is probably actively true.
I think that is an episode.
Yep.
Cool.
We might want to cut out the part about knife and kids.
No. I think that's probably top three moments in the show.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that should be in this.
Yeah, that's it. Just me ranting about knife and kids.
I thought they smelled bad on the outside.
I Thought They Smelled Bad on the Outside is released under an attribution, non-commercial, share-alike 3.0 International Creative Commons license. Please visit our website at sbopodcast.blogspot.com for more episodes as well as social media information. Thank you.